And we are off and running. Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend, engineer, producer, Tom Fairbanks. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Wednesday, February 1st, 2023. Tom, it is St. Bridget's Day, the day that Ireland honors Ireland's only woman patron saint. And it also kind of marks the first day of spring, not really weather-wise, but it's halfway point between winter and the spring equinox. I'll take it. I'll tell you, any hint of spring, I'm in.
So we're celebrating spring first day in Ireland.
Yeah.
So I should have lathered up with Irish spring soap this morning.
There you go. You're kind of wearing, well, you're wearing sort of a turquoise shirt, but I don't know what the color theme is for St. Bridget. Of course, we know St. Patrick's Day is still to come. Of course, the color is green. All right, the Buckmaster Show in our 13th year, broadcasting from the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station that we come to you on is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We have worldwide live listening on my website. That means anywhere in the world, plug in the computer, log into buckmastershow.com. You can hear our programs, and we have a very extensive podcast. The content goes all the way back to when we launched the show, believe it or not, January of 2011. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line. Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasacek for his monthly visit with us. Councilman, how are you today?
Well, I'm fine, but all of that excitement about spring and things warming up could all be for naught tomorrow, because isn't tomorrow Groundhog Day?
Yes, it is. We celebrate, of course, Groundhog's Day in this country, and we'll see if Punxsutawney Phil will see his shadow. And it is a big, big deal in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, where they love to have that big celebration.
Maybe you should do a remote from there sometime.
Boy, that'd be nice. All right. Not this time of year, though. Okay. The plastic program. This went before the mayor and council, I believe, last week. Did they sign off on it? In other words, removing the pilot label?
Yeah. This is no longer a pilot, and it is now going to be a permanent program. As we sit here speaking right now, the community has provided over 45 tons of plastic since we started the pilot back in August. That's, you know, it's bumping 100,000 pounds of bubble wrap and candy wrappers. And so that really demonstrates the community buy-in. So the importance of removing the label, the pilot label, and committing to moving it forward, there are a few different pieces to that. One is that right now there is one drop-off location in the entire region, in the entire state, and that's outside the Ward 6 office. The roll-off is a 22-foot roll-off. It is emptied three times a week, and it is always full. I mean, literally, it was emptied this morning, and my staff and I were out there filling the overfill today, and it's almost full already, and it won't be emptied again for two more days. So the community is completely bought in, and so we are committed to identifying more drop-off locations so that people don't have to drive just over here to participate. And, you know, I mean, frankly, that simply makes sense. I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of environmental sense for someone to drive 30 miles to drop off a bag of plastic, you know. So that is one thing that we're committed to. Maybe the most important piece of the commitment is that Bifusion, the company who manufactures and markets the blocks, they are committed now to coming to Tucson. And so they're in Gardena, California. They're in L.A., and they have committed to manufacturing a blocker, the machine that makes the plastic blocks, and setting up an operation here in Tucson. So since the vote was taken last Tuesday, I've been in touch with their CEO and Mike Ortega, our city manager, and looking at various locations here in Tucson. There are some that may make a lot of sense, such as out at the Los Reales landfill. There, Bifusion is also looking for some kind of in the Midtown area where it's zoned industrial, but they can set up their operation in a very central site. So those conversations are happening. And then the final piece of it will be just to make clear that the city is not owning and operating the blocker. This is Bifusion. While they have a nonprofit arm that's very much engaged in things such as getting plastics out of the ocean, they also have this for-profit arm, and they're going to be setting up. And I've gotten them in touch with four major general contractors here in town. Each of them are very interested in starting to do construction with the blocks. I put them in touch with the Southern Arizona Home Builders Association last week. We've met with the county as well. Everybody is interested in this because everybody recognizes that this plastic is a very useful material, but once you're done with it, it's going to the dump, and that's the sad reality. So we've diverted 45 tons, and we're going to, we've got about 1,000 of the blocks right now that we're doling out to different construction projects and working with the university. One very cool project that we're working towards is out at a group called TROT, Therapeutic Riding of Tucson. They're out on the east side, and it's a stables that they do treatment rehab for autistic kids and veterans with PTSD, and they use horses in the training. And we're going to very likely build a tack room for them out there. And so anything that you can do with a cinder block, you can do with these. And the R values, the K values, the construction costs, it's all superior to cinder blocks. So very excited about scaling this up, and really, really excited about the fact that it was the community who demonstrated to Bifusion that it's worth their while to make the investment in the blocker machine, which is between $1.5 million and $2 million. They're gonna buy it, build it, move it here, and set up shop. So it's pretty cool.
Now, does Bifusion do this for other cities, or are we in the forefront of this particular modality?
When Bifusion made their presentation at the city council, they had a PowerPoint, and one of the slides in it said that the city of Tucson will be the first city literally on the planet to scale up this kind of a program the way that we're doing it. And so to be at the forefront is not just in Pima County or the state of Arizona, but we are the first major city in the world who is looking for a solution of this magnitude to this problem, and it is a problem. We're the tip of the spear on this, and I'm really proud of the community for stepping up and saying we care about this enough to drive however many miles they're coming to the Ward 6 office and make the statement. So now we owe it to the community to say, okay, we heard you. We're going to reciprocate. We're going to make it so you don't have to drive all the way over here. But and here's another piece to it, is that there are commercial operations all over the community right now, shopping centers. I put Bifusion in touch with a shopping center over on Broadway while they were in town last week, and we're talking about building 400-foot-long perimeter retaining wall in the shopping center. You know, again, but what's more important than that is that walk through a grocery store or a clothing store or a pet supply store, and you will see plastic all over their operation. And it is those applications, those commercial customers right now, that are simply enriching the commercial haulers, such as Republic Services or Waste Management, that a company called like Bifusion can go in and reduce the commercial business's costs, and guarantee them that their waste product is going to be put to a good productive use. There is not a downside to it, other than unless you're a stockholder in Republic Services.
Let me ask you something about affordable housing and this Bifusion product. Could you build a house out of this?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there's a guy in Flagstaff right now. They've got a 600 square foot, 2-bedroom, 1-bath house that the city of Flagstaff has permitted. We are the contractors we spoke with. We're also in touch with La Frontera, to talk about affordable housing, low-income housing, because the costs of construction with this material is so much less than having to go and hire a skilled mason and wait for the dry time and buy the concrete and the mortar and lay it and set it and all that, that we can absolutely build these houses, living structures, with this material much more cost-effectively than having to go out and do it with cinder block. So absolutely, those conversations are in play. And so we had to go through the pilot, and what the pilot does a couple things. One is you identify costs that you may not have anticipated, and you know, you're able to kind of square the circle and make, you know, make adjustments in how you're doing this. But the other thing is to introduce the product, introduce the idea to a lot of the commercial enterprises here. I mentioned La Frontera. I mentioned Trot. Those are both nonprofits. I mentioned the university. They are what they are. I mentioned a shopping center. We're partnering with Roadhouse Cinema. We're partnering with The Loft. And so there are every kind of company in the city of Tucson and nonprofit can participate in and benefit from this program.
Wow, it sounds like there's a very bright horizon for this in Tucson, all sorts of applications, and we'll see how it goes. Steve, we're going to take a break right here. I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. I know you love Mona's. What's your favorite up there at Mona's? Do you like the Kringle, or do you go with a croissant? What do you go for?
I like the apple turnover kinds of things.
Oh, okay.
I like that. Yeah, so I'm not in their wheelhouse, but they've got some absolutely excellent pastries up there.
They do indeed. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, open right now for lunch, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They open at 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday. The doors open Sunday at 7. My suggestion, get there early, especially on the weekends. Mona's is the hot spot right now for certainly weekend dining. I know that for a fact, going up there pretty much every weekend. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website, and the website will tempt you with some great pictures of pretty much everything on the menu. More with Steve Kasachek, Tucson City Councilman, right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you interested in sailing on an all-inclusive luxury cruise, trekking on an expedition adventure, or relaxing on a tropical beach? Then join us on February 26th at the Hilton El Conquistador as Bon Voyage Travel hosts our free travel showcase. Over 35 representatives from the world's best travel brands will be on hand to help you discover all the world has to offer. The Bon Voyage Travel Showcase, February 26th. Be sure to visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go back now to the live line and our conversation with Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasacek. Of course, rodeo is a huge tradition here in Tucson, Steve Kasacek, but you bring up something that's not a real pleasant topic, but you are addressing it anyway, about rodeo and the use of electronic prods. And you pointed out in the rodeo parade, I guess their bylaws, or they say that the Tucson Rodeo Parade Committee has a zero tolerance for animal abuse. Persons abusing animals shall immediately be removed from the route and be reported to the authorities. All livestock shall be in good condition and sound condition. But you're saying this does not extend to the rodeo event itself. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah, so real quick background. I reached out to the rodeo committee, the people who staged the rodeo several months ago, and they've gone through a leadership change since then, and said to them, in a nutshell, major rodeos all over the country have openly and explicitly banned the use of electric prods, electric shock prods, on their animals, and would like you to do the same. Join this century, join these major rodeos that have done this. And they finally reached back out and gave some sort of a non-committal answer, saying we'll follow the Professional Rodeo Association standards and only use them when the animal stalls, when it's supposed to leave the chute. Well, so the analogy is that if you're trying to put your dog outside in the evening to do its business in the backyard and it stalls at the door, that you shock the thing and so it jerks outside and runs out. I mean, anybody who loves animals, or even if they don't, would recognize that that's cruel and inhumane. And so I said to them that, look, I'm one vote. But I would love to see you guys openly say we're not going to use electric prods on our animals. If an animal stalls in the chute, then the cowboy gets off the animal and you take it back to the stall and get another one. But you don't shock it. And we're not talking about putting your finger in a 110 outlet where it kind of buzzes you. This is a 3,000 volt shock that is intended to jolt the animal out of the chute. They refuse to do that, and so the rodeo parade group took exception to being lumped together with rodeo operations, and they sent me their bylaws and said, look, we're all about animals, and what you just read comes out of the parade's bylaws. And so my message to the parade is, look, it's simply disingenuous for you to say, we're just doing the parade. We're not celebrating the rodeo. We're off on our own. That parade wouldn't exist but for the rodeo. The same way as the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade doesn't exist but for Thanksgiving, and the MLK parades and all the rest. So they cited their own language in an email to me, in a letter to me, and to the rest of the council, saying we have zero tolerance for animal abuse. Well, if you really do, then join me in reaching out to the rodeo operations and say stop shocking the animals. Now, frankly, lots of communities around the country have banned rodeos completely. I'm not advocating for that. I'm just saying quit using these 3,000-volt electric prods on them. There is an exception. If the bull rider is thrown and the bull is charging at the competitor who's laying on the ground, then, yeah, obviously you protect the participant. But you don't use them just to jack them up so that they give the cowboy a more exciting ride. In effect, it's entertainment value. It's for the crowd, and it's not humane. And I'm not the lone ranger on this. Other rodeos all over the country have banned not only, Bill, the use of electric prods. Many of them have banned calf roping, where they throw the rope around the calf's neck and jerk it to the ground. A lot of them have just simply banned rodeos altogether. That's not where this is headed for me, but it certainly is headed for saying to the rodeo parade group, okay, you threw down, you came to a council meeting, you read your letter out loud, thinking that you were going to embarrass me into submission. The reality is that you demonstrated the point, and the point is that if you truly are concerned about animal abuse, then let's lock arms and let's tell the rodeo stop using the electric prods.
Does the National Rodeo Association, the group that I guess sanctions this Tucson rodeo, what is their position, Steve Kasachek, on the use of the electronic prods?
Language that they cite, the rodeo operations cite from Professional Rodeo Association, says that you only use them for the safety of the animal and the participant. Nobody has been able to explain to me yet where it is for the safety of the animal that you shock it with a 3,000-volt shock. I can understand in some limited examples where it might be for the safety of a participant, but the notion of it being for the safety of the animal is just an oxymoron.
This is kind of a third rail issue in Tucson, Arizona. I mean, the old Pueblo and all the history about the rodeo. My goodness, schools get off. They take off rodeo week. They get a couple of days off. Where is this going? Could it go before the city council and say, the council is urging, with a vote of the council, urging that the rodeo stop the use of electric prods?
Well, I would hope that it doesn't go there. I would hope that the rodeo committee recognizes that this is just a bad look, and it's not necessary. The use of these electric prods is not necessary for the successful staging of their event. And so I would hope that they respond and say, yeah, you know, we get it. We're going to join Wyoming, and we're going to join the other major rodeos around the country that have banned the use of these prods, and we understand. It could come up during our budget conversation where the city council and I say, you know what, unless and until you eliminate the use of these prods, then maybe you don't need city taxpayer funding. That's where I hope it does not head. I really am a little bit surprised that there is such pushback on this. It's not as though I'm standing up saying let's ban the rodeo. That's not what I'm saying at all. But if there is an element to the activity that is clearly abusive of the animals, let's just eliminate that element. And that's what we're talking about. I mean, I don't do dog fighting in pits anymore. Greyhound racing has been banned. I mean, this is not a novel concept to raise the issue of how do we treat the animals that people are paying to see perform, in quotes, in an entertainment setting, and that's what the rodeo is. It's not as though, and you mentioned the old Pueblo and the Wild West. It's not as though we're living in the 1800s where cowboys have to run ride around out in the prairie and rope their calves because that's how the calves are the way they make their living. This is entertainment. I won't call it sport. This is entertainment. And let's just get rid of the electric prods. And then fine, we'll stand down and live and let live.
One of our listeners just said, if I ran the rodeo, I would tell Steve K to pound sand and move to Marana. He hates all the heritage about Tucson. Your response to this listener?
He hates the heritage about Tucson, and yet he's and yet he's supportive of the rodeo. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense. The rodeo is part of the heritage of Tucson.
Right.
And my moving to Marana wouldn't solve any of that.
So the issue isn't over as far as you're concerned, right? I mean, this will this go to a vote of the council?
I hope not. I hope the rodeo committee simply says, you know, we'll stop using the prods. We'll put out a statement. We're not going to use the prods unless it's for the safety of a participant. Boom, done.
All right, about a minute to go. How's the budget picture look as we're into the new year, Steve Kasachek?
We're doing pretty well budgetarily, and one of the primary reason for that is because of the federal funds that we received during COVID. It really helped us to do a lot of outreach to keep businesses thriving, up and running throughout the pandemic. Now that we're back to the relatively normal situation from a tax base standpoint, things are leveling out. I read the current report from Visit Tucson, and hotels and the entertainment industry is doing well again. So it looks as though we're heading in a decent trajectory, and hopefully, from a health and wellness standpoint, we don't see another resurgence, so that we can continue this. But no, the short message is things are doing pretty well.
2 years ago, I was standing in line with my wife for a COVID vaccine, thinking there would be some available. People got up very early. I know we did at 4, got up about 4 in the morning, almost 2 years to the day, Steve Kasachek, to go to the Tucson Convention Center in hopes of getting a shot. My gosh, look at all that's happened in these 2 years.
It's crazy. And now they're giving away home test kits, and people are avoiding the boosters, and I mean it's an all new world. I continue to be very supportive of the COVID boosters and the vaccines, one thing I do not understand is parents who are starting to avoid MMR and polio vaccines and other vaccines. And if that's a spinoff of the controversy we just went through, that's going to be really unfortunate.
Okay, getting back to our lead topic with you about the plastic program, one thing I did not mention is when will the Bifusion organization have their operation set up with the machine here in the city of Tucson?
There will be two stages. The first stage is getting them here to Tucson so they can prepare a site, and that could happen as soon as next month. The machine is being manufactured. There's about a 5 to 6 month lead time on getting the machine here, but it's not as though we're going to wait 5 months for them to start getting very public and very very active here in the community. So they've been here 3 or 4 times already. They're looking for sites right now, and I expect them to be to identify a location and to be here actually marketing the product sooner than the end of spring.
All right, Steve Kasachek, thank you for joining us.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Bill.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Coming up next, Dr. Robert Hendricks, our contributor on education, lots to talk about with Bob after we take the break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Green, well, that's what we think of when spring comes around. And over in Ireland, they call this the first day of spring, St. Bridget's Day. And I'm thinking about gardening when it comes to spring. 3384 East River Road, it's where I go to get all of my plants for my garden at Green Things. Open daily. In their 53rd year of business, their sister business is Zocalo Village. Together, what a beautiful site. 13 acres, chock full of plants, and then Zocalo Village, wonderful merchandise. The Talavera Pottery is worth the trip alone over there. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Robert Hendricks is our contributor on education. Dr. Hendricks, Associate Professor Emeritus at the UA College of Education. Dr. Hendricks, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. And yourself?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. And this, we don't really have a lot of information because it's kind of a story that they're still working with law enforcement, TUSD, Tucson Unified, the victims of apparently a pretty major hack. And that's very troubling.
It is, because I think whether it's a school district or a corporation, you know, when you're highly tied to a network of information, oftentimes very personal information that can be accessed by, you know, some third party, it's a major concern, because we don't know where that information is going to be used. And I'm assuming in the case of TUSD, that there's probably a lot of student information that could be embedded in whatever's been hacked. And so, you know, there's cause for concern. And I think it's one of these issues that of cybersecurity that I think is prevalent and going to be continuing to be a problem for us. That's why I think I certainly, and hopefully your listeners, you know, are very careful about passwords, making sure you don't do something that's very easy to access, and use, at least I've been told, use multiple passwords for different sites. And so this is the kind of thing, though, where the district obviously has been hit by a party that's very sophisticated.
Yep.
And there are cyber sleuths out there that, you know, can get to the bottom of it. But while they untangle it, oftentimes these systems have to remain down and not accessible. So it is a source of concern. And I think we're all vulnerable. Certainly every school district is, but every company. We hear about it over and over again. And I've had experience, probably you have had too, where you've gotten notices that, you know, some company or credit card or something that you've used, you know, has gotten information out, and you know, they advise you what to do, but you're never really quite sure.
Probably every person in America that uses a computer has been, the information has been
right.
in jeopardy
right.
at one time or another.
And I think it's a good segue, if I could, for a moment to talk about this controversy of TikTok.
Yeah, TikTok.
Because, you know, it is an example, I think, of a prevalent system that's out there, a network. The Pew Foundation indicates that 67% of teenagers in the nation subscribe to TikTok.
Are you kidding? That many?
Yeah, that many.
Whoa.
It's become part of a lifestyle. And so we've talked about this before, but, you know, it's a Chinese-owned company.
Mm-hmm.
And there is nothing to suggest that this company, although they've indicated they wouldn't do this, but there's nothing to suggest that they couldn't sell some of this information to a third party. And so there's a lot of personal information. There's a lot of tracking. We know that for a fact, that individuals that use the system, they can track their lifestyle. They can track what areas they continue to log on to. They can use that for advertising purposes and who knows what else. And so in response to that, a lot of universities have adopted a policy where they have disbarred the use of the system, you know, anywhere on their campus.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, for university purposes, that's somewhat limiting to students, although that does not keep students from using it in a personal way.
Do you know if the University of Arizona has decided to ban TikTok?
I believe that they're discussing it, but to my knowledge, they have not done that yet.
Okay.
The question is, you know, how far is this going to go? Because we know that governmental agencies have also done the same thing.
If you're a government employee, I think they've banned TikTok.
They've banned it. But you know what? And I can speak from my experience living in sabbatical in China.
Mm-hmm.
There are workarounds, Bill. Very, very easy. And one of the issues in China when I was there is that universities felt uncomfortable and that students weren't able to, in some ways, access certain websites. We're talking about legitimate academic websites that had been basically blocked by the Chinese government. Well, students would tell me, look, Dr. Hendricks, if you want to get on that site, we can show you how to do that. There are workarounds. Obviously, I did not take them up on their offer because I think that was an open invitation to possibly them coming and taking me away and confining me for a while. So that would... It's not considered a legal enterprise. But the reality is that sometimes students are able to find that. So if it's not TikTok, it's probably going to be something else.
Mm-hmm.
But TikTok's the big elephant in the room right now. And there could be some effort. I hear some voices from Congress saying, let's ban it outright. Let's get rid of it. Let's take it off the table.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bar it from anybody's use.
Yep, we'll see what happens. Let's take a break right here because I want to transition to Tom Horn, who is the new superintendent of public education. Wow, what a different direction.
Yes.
He has decided to take
Absolutely.
The Department of Education, and we're going to address that right after we take the break. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition, first day of February. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. They're going to have some very pleasant weather, as are we, for in the upcoming weather. So it'd be a good weekend to go over to Silver City, maybe do some outdoor activities, camping, not out of the question, and because of the cool nights. But certainly hiking during the day would fit in, I think, to an active kind of lifestyle for folks. Gila National Wilderness, some great hiking trails. Go to southwestnewmexico.org before you take your three-hour drive to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, for all the information about what to do, plenty of activities, where to stay, some great places to stay as well, and some great places to dine. We continue with Dr. Robert Hendricks, our contributor on education. Boy, Tom Horn, now in, this will be his third term as state superintendent of public instruction, not third consecutive, but he comes back after about 10 years absent from heading up the Department of Education. He has laid out a program, an agenda that is radically different from his predecessor.
Yeah, he certainly has, and I was struck by the very comprehensive piece that was in the Star the other day, which projected his K-12 vision for education, and thought it was very comprehensive and also very insightful in terms of the direction he wants to take things. One of the things I want to remind the listeners is that the position itself, state superintendent of public instruction, really is kind of a bully pulpit for education.
How much power do they have?
Very little, actually.
Really?
Very little. You know, the power is in the State Board of Education.
Yes.
The power is in the legislature. The power is in the governor.
State Board of Education, he has a seat at that table.
He has a seat, right.
But he is not the sole person that's going to say, we're going to change it.
That's
a very important point. So the
it
state,
is. It is. But he can be a guide on the side. And as some state superintendents in the past, they have been very influential in terms of public emphasis and being willing to move things in a particular direction. Mr. Horn's been in that position before. I think he knows all the players.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he knows some of the players very well because some of the people he's bringing back in for his council are people that he's worked with before.
I noticed that. Yeah, and these are people that worked for him 10 years ago or whatever.
You know, and I think there's reasonable transparency in terms of where they view things, and they're certainly in line with the direction he wants to take things. But I think it's going to be a very tense time, depending on the political nature of the legislature. We know where the governor is standing, certainly in issues like vouchers,
mm-hmm.
where she really is looking at some ways to either hold the line or reduce the number of voucher opportunities.
Tom is
Mr.
all
Horn
in.
Is saying,
he's all in.
Let's
on the vote.
All in. Let's
in
expand,
fact,
expand it to
yes.
anybody.
Yes. Yes.
Anybody in the state,
yeah.
for whatever reason.
Then there's his whole thing about diversity.
Right. And, it's I'm unclear
mm-hmm.
What he's really saying there.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's taken some actions already to limit some of the curriculum. Now, the State Department does have some advisory roles in terms of the curriculum. But just to the extent in which he can actually take action to eliminate part of the curriculum is somewhat a question.
So to try to eliminate part of the curriculum, you would have to have the State Department of Education Board, which we just mentioned.
Yes,
he has one
State
seat.
Board of Education.
Thank you. Has
which
one
is separate
seat
from the
that.
State
But
Department.
Then you've got local school boards.
You do. You do. You do, and they have they have some vested power and authority as to the direction that they want to take the curriculum. So,
and of course, going back to Mr. Horn's earlier term, there was that conflict with Tucson Unified over curriculum.
It was a
huge
push,
conflict.
Yeah, it was a
it was
push
national
pull
news.
Situation,
yeah.
And it never was really totally resolved. It just sort of dissipated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was ever a real decision on it. But, it's interesting because Mr. Horn inherits some problems that were neither caused by the former state superintendent or former state superintendents. I mean, we do have this issue of a cadre of failing schools.
Yes.
What are we going to do about that?
Mm-hmm.
There has been lots of additional
retention.
Money
yeah.
pumped into those failing schools to a certain extent. Some of them have done better. Others have not. He's indicated, suggested even the possibility of taking over those schools. And that has been done in other states.
Really?
That you put schools that are failing in somewhat of receivership.
Wow.
The state takes them over.
Huh.
And... I've heard that one suggestion has been maybe you turn it over to commercially operated for-profit online schools, other agencies that could take over. Who knows? Who knows what that means? But I also was struck by the fact that he's indicating that there could be more testing.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have an assessment program right now. Whether he feels that's a bona fide program or that it should be expanded or should be thrown out the window and something else brought in. We have changed assessment programs, Bill, in this state a multitude of times. In the last decade, I would say at least four different times. And the problem with that from the standpoint of assessment is that unless you keep your eye on the same ball,
mm-hmm.
you don't know what the progress is. And so that's why national assessment programs, which in some cases the state has really thumbed their nose at, because they said, and I quote this as one legislator say, well, it's not an Arizona test.
Mm-hmm.
It's a national test.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is somehow stained the viability of that test. But the one thing about national tests is that you do have a longitudinal measurement mm-hmm. over the course of years as to how students have progressed. If you keep changing the test, you're never going to have that. And so I've also heard him say that it's going to be a requirement for graduation, and that if students don't pass the test, they don't graduate, mm-hmm. but that they can take it over and over again until they until mm-hmm. they pass it. And mm-hmm. so I don't know what that means either. None of this is new.
No.
We've had graduation requirements from eighth grade where we said if they didn't pass the test, they can't get out of eighth grade. That doesn't exist anymore either. We keep trying old things in new containers.
Moving goalposts around.
Yes, absolutely.
What about the big one that he ran on and still, of course, he talks about all the time? Critical race theory, CRT.
Well, I don't know how to answer that, Bill, because it's elusive.
Mm-hmm.
Most teachers that I talk to,
mm-hmm.
and we're really talking about the secondary level primarily, maybe sometimes the middle school, will tell you that they do not teach that.
Mm-hmm.
Some don't even know what it is. Now, there are probably some outliers. There are probably some teachers in the system that believe in that. I can definitely tell you at the university level, it is taught, but mm-hmm. students opt whether they want to take that class or not. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about is mainstream, secondary level, public school education. I don't know if it's really the threat that it is projected to be. I don't think it's there. And I'm talking to some people who are very honest, some who are, you know, quite liberal,
mm-hmm.
But they will look at me and say, no,
mm-hmm.
we're, this is not an area that we cover. It's not part of our curriculum. So I don't know if it's manufactured. If it's real, I have yet to hear where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is there, let's have some honest discussions about it. But I think it's a bit of a phantom flagpole.
All right. Well, we've been in touch with Mr. Horn. He has agreed to come on the program.
And I think that's terrific.
Yeah. He'll be with us on one of our Friday Focus interviews here in the coming weeks. Also, we've already booked Chris Mays, the new Arizona Attorney General, for our Friday Focus interviews. So that's where we are in that. Just about out of time. We did want to talk a little bit about school uniforms. We've got probably 20 seconds. Is the trend toward school uniforms or not?
The trend is really actually moving away from them.
Oh.
Primarily from the groups that are saying that it's we need to allow students to be more individualistic. There's also some tones of that it's racist, that there are issues of property rights that are being violated. I hope we can get into that in depth at one of our future sessions.
All right, Bob Hendricks, thank you very much. Stay safe. On behalf of Dr. Hendricks and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show, we've got Dave Ramsey and his popular show About Money coming up at about 1:05. Bill Buckmaster saying, thanks for joining us. Back with you in about 23 hours.